Welcome to the Future Thinkers Podcast. I'm Mike Gilliland.
And I'm Yulia Ivanova. And this podcast is all about the future. Hello,
freak bitches. You all said bitches.
Yeah, I did.
Yubi. Welcome. This is episode number 14. We're going to talk about revolutions today.
Yes, yeah, something that has been brewing in our minds for a while now.
Yeah. So we read Russell Brand's new book called Revolution. Excellent book. Highly recommended. I definitely recommend the audiobook version because he narrates it himself.
It's hilarious.
He's obviously quite the performer if you're familiar with what he does. So yeah, it was an interesting book. Got us thinking a lot. Quite a bit of it is sort of analyzing the current state of our social and political systems and trying to figure out ways to revolutionize how we are organizing as societies. So, you know, Yuvi and I have been doing the digital nomad thing and traveling around and pretty much existing pretty far outside of the systems as they are. And because of that perspective, I think looking back into the way the system is, it's really obvious and really easy to see how fucked up the whole system is. And I don't mean that from a very general point, like it sounds like fuck the system, fuck the police, all of that kind of stuff. It's very clear how we're being manipulated in the media by corporations, by the government to believe that this quote unquote democratic system works, that we can vote in people who are going to solve all the problems. And it's just a matter of voting the right person between the two people, you know? So, yeah, that's what we're talking about today is alternative systems, some of the problems we're going to face if we can collectively organize and bring on a new system.
Yeah, I think actually, of course, Russell Brand is by far not the first person to talk about this. I think he just put it in a really hilarious and accessible way that everyone can understand. But the Venus Project has talked about this, and I'm a fan of it myself. And Zeitgeist Movement as well have talked about this, how the current systems are not working and we need to organize ourselves in different systems that are more ecologically sound and don't manipulate people and don't use cheap labor in the third world that results in suffering and death, and to bring, you know, cheaply made goods that with built-in planned obsolescence.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, our generation's always been pretty inspired by revolutionary movies like The Matrix or Fight Club or Hunger Games, you know, things that take a look at our current paradigm and turn it on its head. Those movies interest me, and there's definitely a common theme between them, whereas we're all controlled by a system, and we're all trying to fight to find out who we are as people and who we are as a society. So those movies have really been a long-term theme in my mind, and now that I've read Russell Brand's book, it feels like I've got more of a handle on what those themes really mean, and that it's not just a fiction. It's actually possible for us to create these alternative systems, and that government systems only exist to govern us, to tell us what to do, to give us rules, to give us an infrastructure. But because of the internet, because of new technologies that we've developed now, we could actually have an alternative system that's not centralized, that's not managed by a handful of people in high places. You know, we, as the internet has shown, we can collectivize very easily. We can get together, we can organize, and we can change the way things are done. So why don't we talk about the status quo first? So what is the paradigm that we're existing in right now, and why is it not serving us anymore?
I think we're living in an illusion of democracy, in the West at least, but also in Asian countries and developing countries, it's the same. You know, people go and vote, and there's these political parties competing against each other, and one of them wins, and sometimes the other one wins. But in the end, nothing really changes in a major way. And that's because those political parties don't actually control anything. It's the corporations, the people with the money, that have vested interest in keeping things a certain way, that control things, and they do the lobbying to make sure those things happen.
100%. Of the presidents that have won, the political parties that have won in the United States have been the parties with the most money. 100%. It's never happened that someone who had less money won their presidency. So isn't that interesting? And when you when you look at how pervasive corporate lobbying is, it just kind of makes you realize at that point that your vote is worth nothing compared to a corporation. I watched Jeremy Paxton just tear into Russell Brand in an interview saying, well, if you want change, you have to vote. And Russell Brand saying, no, there's no way I'm voting. It's irrelevant. It doesn't do anything. Perpetuates the illusion that you can make a difference in the current system, which is completely false.
Yeah, it's just meant to pacify people, make them feel like they have a choice.
Mm-hmm. It's the illusion of choice.
Yeah.
So part of the problem that we're facing in this system is that the system has domesticated us. It's made us dependent on the system. We don't go hunting. We don't go foraging. We don't farm. If we need anything, we go to the store and we buy it.
Yeah.
And that's a big problem, because if those systems all of a sudden disappear, we're like helpless children,
mm-hmm.
Not able to fend for ourselves.
I'd like to relay my own experience here. I grew up in the Soviet Union, and then when I was 6 or 7 years old, Soviet Union crashed, and there was pretty much anarchy for a couple of years. There was no stable government in Russia, and so the economic system was screwed up, and a lot of people had trouble having enough food, or just there were shortages of everything. You would walk into a store and the shelves were empty, and you would come up to the store clerk and ask them what they had today. And maybe they had bread, or maybe they had something else. But it was like, maybe they had two things in the whole store. And so my family actually did farming, and we grew our own vegetables and fruit, and we had pigs and chickens. So we were able to have food, but most people around us had no idea how to do that, and they were jealous of us that we had food. So I think it actually, I mean, even with the internet, it takes time to learn those skills. And I do think they're very useful in just like knowing what kind of even wild plants you could use for different things. And I grew up in the countryside, so I learned those things. People kind of see it as like, oh, doom and gloom, you're doomsday prepper or whatever. But I actually think it's a really useful skill, or at least knowledge to have how to do those things.
But you think it takes time to do that, to learn and get the experience. And my attitude, maybe I'm naive about this because I've never had to do it, but I think anything I've ever needed to learn, I've just been able to, I've been a quick Google search away. So why is this any different?
Yeah, I think from personal experience, I can see that it's not easy to do it. But I do think that we're getting a lot of new technologies now that will make it a lot easier for an average person to do it. And you don't have to like be a farmer or have had experience for 5 years to know how to do it. With aeroponics, for example, I think a lot of it can be automated, and I'm very interested in learning more about that myself, to actually know how to set it up, how to set up aeroponic systems and hydroponics and all that stuff.
Yeah, okay. So what about the dependency on money? We're not living in a democracy. We're living in a corporatocracy, an age where money is the only thing that matters to everybody. So like a lot of people can't even imagine what it would be like existing in a society, in a world without money, where we didn't need to exchange this number for something else.
Obviously, the reason why we use money is because we want to be able to quantify the value of something. And so far, money is the closest thing we've found that could easily quantify anything to make it possible for people to exchange things. I think the problem is not money per se, but how we use money and how it is controlled right now. That, like you mentioned, it's not actually based on gold or anything like that anymore. I can't remember what the number is, but I think something like 99% of all money nowadays is digital. So it's not even cash. It's not based on anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's based on debt. Yeah. And the Federal Reserve is printing money year on year just to keep the economy afloat. So it's not even really based on anything physical and tangible that can be traded. It's created out of nothing. It's created out of more debt. So already we are under this assumption that this thing is real. It has such real value, and that we should be dedicating our entire lives to accumulating this fake money. Mm-hmm. It's a big problem. And I think, to me, it's not so much creating the external systems that allow us to exist outside of money. It's actually the psychology and the belief system that we have in our head that is going to be the most difficult thing to transition into a post-revolution culture. Like, how do we stop believing psychologically that money has that intrinsic value.
Yeah, so I think that's the problem exactly, that people believe that money is valuable in itself. Because before, money was just a means of exchange. So, you know, if you wanted to exchange your pound of iron for however many apples that equaled, you needed to kind of find out how much those things were worth, what the exchange rate of iron to apples would be. And money was kind of the middleman that you used. But now money has value in itself. So I think if people kind of get back to the idea that money is just a means to measure something, to measure tangible things, I think that would help everyone. And I think also we might need just a system of money that is not based on debt and all the sketchy shit that banks are doing. I don't know if Bitcoin is it. I think Bitcoin is, or cryptocurrencies in general, I think they're in their infancy. But I do think it's an interesting system that is decentralized. It's not based on fiat currency, or at least it shouldn't be. Right now, it's still traded.
Kind of tied, yeah. It's because people trade between the dollar or whatever currency and Bitcoin. That's the problem. But I agree with you, and I think the main point that makes the most difference here is Bitcoin and these cryptocurrencies are decentralized. Mm-hmm. That's the main thing, is that no one really has control over it. It's a community. We've all agreed on the value of it. So next point. And there's a lot of things that we have no control over, like war or destruction of the environment or planned obsolescence with products that you buy. The amount of times I have to replace my goddamn cables with my computer because Apple makes them to disintegrate. That kind of attitude with planned obsolescence is a huge problem. And that's based on that striving for profit. So it's hard to imagine a system where that kind of psychopathy doesn't exist, you know, where the profit doesn't come first, where people come first, longevity comes first, environment comes first, and profit is, you know, maybe fifth on the list. So I wonder how that is possible to transition into, because it requires that everyone takes personal responsibility for where they choose to put their money, what products they choose to buy.
Yeah, I think that's the, you know, war and planned obsolescence and destruction of the environment. All those things are symptoms of profiteering, of companies trying to make as much profit as possible. I kind of have trouble wrapping my head around it. Why people would even need that much money? I have trouble understanding it.
Apple makes billions. How come they can't extend the product life cycle to a couple years? Why does it have to be a single year? It's very clear what the intentions are of companies like this. You just have to sit back and stare in awe at the kind of psychopathic behavior and mentality that has to exist in the people that run these companies to waste so much money, consumers' money, waste so much material on having these product life cycles be no longer than a year. Like, how much effort and brilliant minds are being put into the planning of these machines becoming obsolete within a year?
And what kind of brainwashing has to go into that to make these brilliant engineers believe that they're doing the right thing?
Yeah, how do you look yourself in the mirror in the morning and understand that you have cost so many people so much money, or that you have contributed on a deep level to the destruction of the environment? It's pretty amazing. So, okay, next up, that's the status quo. So what could a post-revolution society look like? What are some of the alternatives that we're looking at?
Well, some good alternatives have already been proposed, and that's, you know, the Zeitgeist movement and the Venus Project. But I think when a lot of people look at those, it's hard to imagine how we would transition. Well, for example, the Venus Project is designed by an architect called Jack Fresco. And his idea is that we would have a resource-based economy. So all the resources in the world would be distributed equally to everyone around the world. And he's designed these eco-friendly cities that would be built by machines using available resources. And that essentially most of the jobs would be outsourced and automated to machines. And people would just focus on creative pursuits and science, put a little bit of time out of their day to maintain the machines and maintain the systems. So that's kind of the general idea. I love the idea, but I think a lot of people just have trouble understanding how we would go from where we are now to this utopian system, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. I feel like one of the bigger obstacles in people who believe they have to maintain the status quo, they believe this current system is what works, what they're proposing is the only way, the only thing that's keeping society together. They believe when people are left on their own, they turn into animals.
Yeah, I think that's so funny, actually, because we've been living very much outside of the system for a few years now. We're not, you know, totally off the grid. Of course, we still use money. But we just don't participate in a lot of things. Like, we don't have jobs. We don't vote.
We're not huge consumers of anything, really, aside from Apple fucking products. I think the main point I'm getting at here is that there are a lot of people that believe that they have to maintain the status quo because they believe people can't manage themselves. Communities can't manage themselves. They believe that there always needs to be a figurehead or a leader. And as we can see with the internet, it is highly decentralized. People do organize. People do stand up and say, I will lead this, or I will contribute to this project for free. It's an amazing way, I think, to run a society, and we've seen micro examples of it with people contributing to giant pools of knowledge like Wikipedia. Mm-hmm. No one's getting paid to update posts in Wikipedia. No one's getting paid to create posts and share things in Reddit. Mm-hmm. People are sharing information because they want other people to see that information. It seems so simple to have a government system run under the same way that we run the rest of the internet. Like, you know, we've got to maintain roads, we've got to make sure everyone gets food, provide universal health care. Like, even that, the basics that governments are supposed to do for us, they fail at miserably. Things like this are just already not being provided. I think one of the bigger things that we need to transition to is more group participation, more people participating in co-ops of about 100 to 150 people, where you're responsible for your own community, you're responsible for the community being fed and sheltered, you know, have access to medical facilities, like all of that kind of stuff, I think can be managed by small groups of people independent of a centralized governing body.
Yeah, I think a lot of us are very much disconnected. You know, we might feel like we're connected through social networks, and we don't even know our neighbors. We don't know the people who live in our communities. And I think that makes it easy for us to not care. Because it's funny, you know, we're still operating out of these meat suits that have evolved over thousands of years, and we still have pretty much the same brains that our ancestors did 10,000 years ago. And so we're programmed to only care about our extended group. So when we see a homeless person on the street and he's not part of our group, we just don't care. We don't feel any empathy. So I think living in communities that are more connected would really help that. You know, if we actually knew our neighbors and we cared about what happened on our street.
I think it's kind of easy to imagine a utopian future. It's easy to see the problems with our current system, but transition's the real difficulty here.
Yeah,
so a lot of people think transition is going to look like violence and heads being chopped off and SWAT teams versus giant crowds of people throwing cocktail bombs and all of that kind of stuff. So how does a transition happen in a peaceful way? Because that's really the big thing. When a government, when this centralized governing body has the monopoly on violence, and that's their go-to tool for suppressing people is violence. So how do we subvert that?
Yeah, so I think that actually is the perfect reason why we cannot use violence to have a revolution, because the powers to be already control that way more than we can imagine. You know, they have drones and armies, and if we use violence, we can never win this. So I think the best way we can do it is just to simply wean ourselves off of the current systems and create our own systems that are decentralized and just switch over to those systems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's actually a really good point. New technologies pop up and they make old technologies obsolete. It's not that they have to fight to gain a foothold in people's lives. They just have to be better than the other system. I wonder if that would be the exact same for government. I have a feeling it would be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we need our own systems. We need to be separate from the government. We need to be separate from centralized power and depending on corporations to provide everything for us. And it's actually really not that difficult. If people like us are already doing it and are already completely mobile and just detached from any one area. If shit hits the fan in a single area, we just take off and leave.
Exactly.
So what enables us to do that? Well, I think the main thing is having income coming in through the internet, providing value on the internet that we get paid for.
Yeah. It's easier to travel on a Canadian passport than many other passports. So in that sense, I guess we're lucky. You know, if I still had to travel on my Russian passport, it would be a lot more difficult. So Peter Diamandis talks about this actually really well. It's the different aspects that new technology needs to have in order for it to be disruptive. And it's the 8 Ds, and Mike can read it out to you.
So the 8 Ds are deception, disruption, digitization, dematerialization, democratization, decentralization, demonetization, and disintermediation.
So what that means is that these new technologies can't rely on a central governing body. They have to be available to everyone, so that's a democratizing. They have to be affordable to everyone, demonetizing, or they have to be near zero cost. Disintermediation, so that means that you don't need an intermediary to access this technology. Anyone can access it through the internet.
There's no middlemen.
Yeah, deceptive, that at first they might seem like too crazy or out there, like maybe they won't take off. Or Bitcoin, some people think, oh, it's too weird.
I think deceptive is about getting the foothold into society before anyone can stop it. So it's deceptively disruptive.
Right, yeah, that's a good way to put it as well. And disruptive, obviously, it means that it puts the current system on its head. Yeah, so this is a really interesting way to look at that. And I think that's exactly what we need for these new technologies. And you might think that it's crazy or too out there or it's not happening yet, but it's already happening to a smaller degree. I mean, maybe these technologies don't have all the 8 Ds, but they have some. And Bitcoin is one of them, or cryptocurrencies in general. Airbnb is doing it. Uber is doing it. There's a new startup in Europe that is essentially an Airbnb for trading clean energy like solar and wind. And I'll link to it in the show notes. But we need these systems and we just have to switch over to them from the current systems that are controlled by corporations and governments and essentially wean ourselves off of the old systems. And the old systems will suffocate under or just collapse under their own weight.
So a lot of young people listen to our podcast and they tend to ask us a lot, what should they do? You know, in that post high school graduation period where you have no idea what you want to do and you think, might as well go back to school. So what course should I take to start my career? So what advice would you give to somebody with this new paradigm in mind, with like a post-revolution culture in mind? If they're going to learn something, if they're going to set their direction for the next 10 years of their life, what do you think that focus should be in terms of these 8 Ds?
Well, my answer in terms of school is the same as it has always been. Don't go to university because it's a system and it's trying to funnel you into a certain thing. It's trying to funnel you into this position where you're a cog in the wheel. But if you actually want to contribute to this world change, then you can't participate in that system. It might seem scary and you might not know what to do. And of course, it's easier to have some professor tell you what to do. But I don't think that's the right way if you want to participate in this, you know, world change that's going to happen whether you do or don't.
I think Peter Diamandis puts it really well, and he says, you can have just one singular focus. Try and change the lives of 1 billion people. And that's, okay, that sounds crazy, but there are ways that you can distribute a piece of software or a product or an idea that can really change the lives of 1 billion people. And all you need to do is look at the current problems we face as a planet and try and dedicate your time to solving one of those problems. You know, that's exactly what people like Elon Musk are trying to do. You know, that would be my piece of advice, is go after something that will solve world problems, not just the individual problems of small businesses or the individual problems that you would see in late night infomercials. You know, don't invent problems. There are tons of real problems that already exist. Just look at what we face. And just because they seem too big doesn't make them impossible, doesn't make them even hard necessarily. It just cuts your work out for you. If you get the right people together, and with the internet, you have access to the right people. All you need to do is organize and get those people together and get their minds on solving the problem. If it's a matter of creating systems for people to transition into a post-revolution culture, then okay, what are they going to need? They're going to need decentralized voting. They're going to need food. They're going to need shelter. So how do we solve...
Decentralized internet, decentralized power,
exactly.
Decentralized...
They need access to information. Really, that's the big thing, is they need access to information and food. If we can get those two to them, then I think things will really take care of themselves, because other people will be inventing new technologies that will be shared through these systems that you can help provide. So yeah, my piece of advice, if you're a young person just getting out of school and trying to figure out what you want to do, and you see the problems that exist in the world, but you don't know how to try and fix them, is to set your sights on a problem that you think you have the ability to start learning about and start tackling, or that you think you could organize other people who are experts in different fields that could help solve these problems. I think it's much, much easier than it at first seems. And if you dedicate your time and dedicate your life to it, you can actually solve them.
Yeah, don't waste your most fruitful years working for the system that's going to probably collapse within the next decade anyway. Or at least I hope.
Yeah. Okay, but then there's this other thing that even we have faced quite often in the past is... You know, when you're trying to put food on the table and you're trying to get shelter and you're trying to get clothes, nothing else matters. Like, you can't even squeeze that mental energy into your brain.
It's the Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about this the other day, actually, how corporations keep you at the bottom of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. All the products that are heavily advertised, all of them are food-related, shelter-related, sex-related, like... They keep you focused on those bottom needs instead of moving up the ladder and trying to get like self-actualized, but not even at the top, even halfway through, just getting community and acceptance and love and self-esteem, those things. People don't even have that. They're just focused on eating fatty donuts and, I don't know, getting laid.
Fatty donuts. The National Fatty Donuts Campaign. It's just a scourge on society. Okay, so the main thing I think that's the problem we're facing is that a lot of people are facing is that it's difficult to expand your focus when you're just trying to put food on the table. And that's what a lot of people are facing right now, is just trying to live day to day. So how do you get past that? I think it's a matter of educating yourself, doing whatever you can in the moment to get yourself, get that food on the table and take care of yourself, but educating yourself, spending the extra time. I mean, I know it's tough when if you're depressed or if you're just trying to make ends meet, it's tough to find the extra time, but I think you have to find it. You have to be able to push to give yourself that extra couple hours to learn and learn and learn and learn and make yourself self-sufficient. There are ways to do it. There's tons of people that have been able to take themselves out of the system and provide an income source for themselves, independent of any corporation or job or anything like that. So I think that would be the first step, is try and gain some independence from the system.
Even just being a freelancer.
A freelancer, totally.
Learn,
you know,
a skill.
You can make ends meet that way. And actually, part of the reason we are traveling is because it was too difficult to make ends meet while we were still living in an expensive Western city. So we were like, screw it. We know how to make money on the internet. It's not making ends meet right now, but if we move to a Southeast Asian country, we could actually make that money stretch a lot further. So, you know, there are a ton of options out there. You just have to take the time to educate yourself and prep, because I think the revolution is coming. I mean, a lot of people believe it's coming. We can't maintain this system for much longer. Currencies are collapsing all over the place. People are losing jobs to automation and outsourcing. A society cannot sustain itself on zero income. And people are going to wake up to this as more and more people lose their sources of income and can't afford to feed themselves. And you'll see people marching on the streets. You'll see people protesting. You'll see people fighting back. So now is the time to educate yourself on becoming independent. Become independent now. Don't wait till after it happens. And if you can do that, then you can start looking at solving problems that are just bigger than food on the table.
I think also some people might think it's like taking a huge jump and it's scary, but it's actually just taking baby steps. It's not even, some of them might seem like a huge jump. Like when we moved to Southeast Asia, that was pretty big. But I think a lot of the other changes that we made are just gradual. You're just trying to wean yourself off the old system and plug yourself into a new decentralized system. So if you just do it one by one with little things, even these startups like Uber and Airbnb and Bitcoin, I mean, it's not a startup, but it's a platform, using these decentralized systems more, because I think they will be a lot more resilient when shit starts hitting the fan.
It's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. You know, we need to be transitioning into a new system. I do think that, this is probably controversial to say, but I do think that the worse it gets, the better and the quicker this is going to be. You know, we'll be moving into the new system quicker, and that's what really needs to happen. So if we can burn hard, if we can just go and nosedive into the ground quicker, this is just my personal opinion, if we can have more people unemployed quicker and everyone wakes up all at once rather than it be a gradual and slow death, you know, if it's just quick, then we can start to look at new systems a lot more quickly.
Gotta rip that Band-Aid off.
I think so, yeah. It's going to be a little painful for some people, but I think the main thing is access to information, access to decentralized sources of income and food and shelter and all that stuff. I think that's the most important thing.
You know, we've talked a lot about all this money stuff and how we still need money to make all these things happen. But actually, there is a chance that we might not need money or as much money to make things happen in the future, because there's a lot of technologies being invented right now that will make near zero cost production possible. So it's maybe it's just a setup cost for the system, and then it maintains itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that actually kind of brings me back to what I was talking about with co-ops with 100 to 150 person societies. I mean, you only need a handful of things to feed and to provide for the needs of a small group of people. You need maybe one or two 3D printers. You need one or two large solar panels. You need a few people maintaining gardens and maintaining farms and that kind of thing. Like, it really doesn't have to be every single person investing a ton of money into the startup costs of getting the self-sustaining architecture set up. It really is just a matter of you pre-organizing these groups. Everyone agrees on the direction of the group. So I think we just really need group organization structures. We just need kind of a training manual for becoming self-sufficient.
And we need people to agree that this needs to happen. Mm-hmm. And people to not be afraid. I think there's a lot of interest, even just out of fear, to keep things as they are, because people are afraid of the unknown.
Face that fear. Jump off the cliff. All right, guys, that's it for this episode. This is a fun one. I think, you know, as always, we're always passionate about these topics. We're not currently monetizing the Future Thinkers podcast, so we don't end up publishing a ton of episodes on a regular basis, but when we have ideas and we feel passionate about it, it's pretty easy to see that it's time to record a new episode. So I'm glad you guys are hanging in there. As always, if you want to check up on any of the information that we talked about in this episode, you can go to futurethinkers.org/episode14. And of course, if you want to leave a review, it would definitely help us out. Leave us a 5-star rating or whatever number of stars you think we deserve. So yeah, see you on Reddit. See you on the internet. Bye.
Bye.